are one of the most famous organizations in the world. They are the object of countless conspiracy theories. And if Hollywood is to be believed, they have had a long history of secrecy and intrigue. They are the Freemasons. But who are they exactly? Are they really as powerful and mysterious as people say? And if they aren't, where did all the hype come from? My friend Stephen Guerra just released an episode of his podcast, History of the Papacy, to answer that question. We will provide you with a few minutes of that episode as a preview. If you think that presidents are fascinating, wait till you check out Stephen's podcast, History of the Papacy, to learn about all of the popes from the last 2,000 years. Enjoy.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Today, I am really excited to have a special guest on today, Professor John Dickey, who is a professor of Italian studies at University College London. Professor Dickey is the author of numerous books, including, and importantly for today, The Craft, How the Freemasons Created the World. Mr. Dickey has also been a guest on many documentaries and was host of the World Pasta Championship, which I thought that was really cool. Maybe before we even get started, what got you interested in the Freemasons as a topic?
Well, my main field of interest is the Sicilian Mafia. I've published all sorts of books and academic articles on mafia organizations in Italy. And it's a curious story, incidentally. In 2013, the summer of 2013, they arrested a fugitive mafia boss who'd been living under an assumed name for 20 years as an anonymous sort of limousine driver on the outskirts of London. And it's not every day that that kind of thing happens in London. So I spent a lot of time on the media explaining the basics of the Sicilian Mafia to, you know, BBC, TV shows and radio stations and so on and so forth. And in the course of that, as I very often do when people ask, what is the Mafia? I say, well, you know, mafiosi themselves define it as a kind of Freemasonry for criminals. Similar sorts of structures and so on. And then I got home at the end of the day and found an email from the head of communications of the United Grand Lodge of England, who told me that he'd been bombarded with indignant phone calls from Freemasons who had assumed that I meant to accuse them of being the Mafia. And would I like to come in for a chat? And I went in for that chat, went into the Freemasons Hall in Covent Garden in London, and had a really interesting discussion with them. And it really struck me then that really the stories that are out there in the public domain about Freemasonry, particularly about its history, really boil down to two opposed types. You know, for most people, you know, for the Freemasons, it's this sort of noble tradition of selflessness and brotherhood and so on and so forth. And for a lot of other people, it's this grubby cabal, or even worse, a conspiracy. And when you look across the big arc of Masonic history, while both of those stories have a little bit of truth to them, they don't begin to cover the kind of kaleidoscope of ways in which Freemasonry has affected history and interacted with history at a global level, because it is a global.
In the broadest strokes, what is Freemasonry?
Freemasonry is a fraternal organization based on rituals and myths and symbols. Most of those symbols, the most important of them at least, derive from the work and the accoutrements of medieval stonemasons, so aprons, gloves, trowels, and the like. And those symbols have a ritual function in teaching moral lessons through ritual. And those moral lessons go towards, if you like, metaphorically, building a better man, just as the medieval stonemasons once built castles and cathedrals. That's roughly what Freemasonry is at its heart.
Where did Freemasonry begin? Because there's sort of the legendary explanation, and what's maybe the historical explanation, and how does that blend in with their legendary beginnings?
Right from the beginning, Freemasons have been wedded to a whole series of legends, you know, that somehow project their past all the way back to the Temple of King Solomon or to the Middle Ages or whatever it might be. We're now much more certain about those origins, and there were two key moments, I think. The first was at the very, very end of the 16th century in Scotland, when we first get, and we're talking about the elite of stonemasons. So we're in the Renaissance, if you like, rather than the Middle Ages, the early modern period, rather than the Middle Ages, as Freemasons believe, where you get a contact between the sort of guild culture of Scottish, elite Scottish stonemasons, and a Renaissance court with its various intellectual fashions and so on. And that sort of cross-fertilization opens these guild organizations, which then began to be called lodges, to gentlemen who had nothing to do with building buildings, yeah? And then there's a second moment, not in Edinburgh, the Edinburgh of James VI of Scotland, the king, but in London. London in the early 18th century, the London of the beginning of the Whig ascendancy, as it's known, when Freemasonry acquires its rule book, acquires a new structure with a grand lodge to regulate its affairs in England. And really at that point, it loses all contact with real stonemasons or real builders. They tended actually to be what would be architects these days, men of very grand status by comparison with humble builders, if you like. And at that point, it becomes a kind of gentleman's club. And at that point, also in the early 18th century, it begins to expand across the world on following the same routes as empire and commerce. So very, very quickly, it's an astonishingly quick spread. Within 15, 20 years, you've got Masonic lodges in Charleston, in Boston, in the Caribbean, in India, in across Europe, in the Middle East. It was a phenomenon that had found its moment, if you like, and didn't look back from there.
The demographics of the group, so you're pointing towards, these are the people who are they the merchant class? Are they the upper class? Who was drawn the most towards becoming a Freemason?
It depends a bit where you go, because the sort of class connotations, but also religious connotations and so on, so of Freemasons vary a little bit wherever you go. But really, they're a sort of middle class organization who would look to gentlemen in the terms of the, you know, the 18th century gentry, rather, but who would be looking to sponsorship from the elite to guarantee their status, to provide support, to protect them from any, you know, political dangers, people who might think they were doing something dodgy in their lodges and so on and so forth.
Let's start to zoom in, because the focus of this series is the 18th and the 19th century in Italy and with the Catholic Church. These groups of people, these Freemasons, what was their situation in the late 18th century, early 19th century, this time of enlightenment and revolution? What role did they play in the grand scheme of politics and culture at that time?
Yeah. Now, it's often said, and I think often with good reason, that the Freemasons became a kind of school of public life in various parts of them. I mean, they did all kinds of different things that were sort of, very quickly, London lost control of the Masonic brand, if you like, as it spread around the world, and all kinds of different forms of Freemasonry evolved, performing sort of magic rituals, all kinds of things, and disobeying the founding rules. But broadly speaking, yes, they were aligned with Enlightenment values. They did act as a kind of halfway house towards a more secular society where a certain formal equality between men operated. What it formal in the sense of rule-bound equality, right under the modern sort of rule of law and on our way towards modern democracy. Now, that already made them subject to suspicion on the part of absolutist Europe, you know, a society that admitted that had religious tolerance as one of its founding beliefs. That's very important. In 18th century London, you find all kinds of members of different Protestant churches as members, but also Jews, also Catholics, deists. I mean, this was really one of the most remarkable things about 18th century Freemasonry. But again, from the point of the sort of absolutist Catholic powers, that looks very, very suspicious. And what really energizes those suspicions is the Masonic cult of secrecy, which is something that is very, very important, because that acts as the sort of engine of suspicion surrounding Freemasonry and the suspicion that accompanies throughout its history.
I think we need to mention a little bit more about this, the secrecy aspect. Could you maybe fill us in a little bit on, and that's probably what most people are interested in, what they know the Masons most for, is what is the secrecy of the organization?
Yeah. Masonic rituals revolve around secrets. The rituals are secret, supposed to be secret. They're conducted in a secluded place, closed space inside a lodge. The rituals involve learning secrets, and the secrets are hidden behind symbols and allegories and stories and so on. And at the same time, they're also, you have to swear terrifying oaths to keep the secret. But there's a curious paradox in Masonic secrecy, because actually when you strip away all of this ritual paraphernalia, the secrets of Freemasonry are disarmingly banal. The three most important secrets that Freemasons learn in the course of these elaborate long rituals that they go through are, in order, try to be a nice guy, try to learn more about the world, and thirdly, and most importantly, death's a pretty serious business, and it kind of makes you reflect on things a bit, which of course makes me wonder, well, why all the fuss about such platitudes? And the reason, I think, is that because Freemasonry is the child of an age of ferocious religious conflict and also of the Enlightened, if you're going to create an organization that has a sense of the sacred about belonging to it, then you can't put any religious credo or any theological principles or any political principles at the heart of your brotherhood, because everything's controversial in that period. So what you have instead is bland home truths that everybody can subscribe to, but then you wrap them in this elaborate cult of secrecy, which acts to attract people towards the Freemasons. I want to become a member because I want to get access to the secrets, but also binds people together once they're there, once they're inside, because not only are they the possessors of the secrets, but they've also been through the elaborate rituals together and put a lot of effort into performing them that make them belong. So secrecy is crucial to Freemasonry, but at the same time, inevitably, it creates suspicion. It creates the idea that they're up to no good.
It kind of reminds me of a mystery cult or a mystery religion from the Roman era and the Greco-Roman era. Were the Masons trying to make almost a new religion? Because it kind of sounds like religion, how you're explaining it, but religion with maybe a certain element stripped away.
That's certainly how the Catholic Church perceived Freemasonry. They thought the Catholic Church perceived them as heretics. Yeah, the secret was heresy or even devil worship. Freemasons fervently deny that they are a religion in the sense they say, well, we don't have any theological code for you to subscribe to. In the predominant versions of Freemasonry, you have to believe in God to be a member, but you can be a member of any religion. You can be a believer. You can take your oaths on any sacred book that you like. So in that sense, Freemasonry isn't a religion, but I think it does some of the work of a religion. I think you're right. It's a kind of second order religion. And one of the things that it does is confront the fear of death. Death, symbolically represented, is present in all Masonic rituals in one way or another, through skulls or coffins or swords or nooses around the neck or whatever it might be. And I think, you know, as the famous philosopher Bertrand Russell said, the fear of death is really the motivating force behind all religion. And I think Freemasonry gives a shape to death, gives you a sense that you can confront it with your brethren, you can confront that fear. And in that very, very basic sense, it is doing some of the sort of spiritual work that religions do.
Let's maybe get into some of the conflict points that the Catholic Church had with Freemasonry. One of them that seems to come up is, like you said, with the secret society aspect, but also with oath-taking that the Catholic Church traditionally didn't like anybody making oaths. What were some of the other conflict points, especially political ones, between the Catholic Church? Really, why did the Catholic Church have such problems with the Masons?
Yeah. The Catholic Church, the Pope excommunicated the Freemasons for the first time in 1738, and that excommunication would be repeated again and again throughout history and is still in force today. Still in force today. The last pronunciation on it was in 1983. You have to remember, the basic reasons are theological, exactly. Oath-taking, the idea that the Freemasons espouse a certain degree of religious pluralism when the church believes it possesses the ultimate truth. That's what it's all about, the Catholic Church. But you have to remember, in the 18th century and for first part of the 19th century, the Pope wasn't just a Pope, he was a king as well. He was an absolute monarch in a large band of territory across central Italy, from Rome up to Bologna and thereabouts. And so he voiced misgivings on political reasons as well, mixed political and religious reasons. Again, in his mind, there wouldn't have been any difference really between the two. The Freemasons looked very suspicious because politics wasn't supposed to happen anywhere out there in society. It was supposed to happen in the court. And yet suddenly you've got this group of men organizing on their own terms, doing something that looked very like politics, or at least civic gathering. There were rumors, not always unfounded, it has to be said, that Freemasons were British spies. Britain itself was deeply suspicious because of its newspapers and its overmighty parliament, and the fact that it, of course, was a Protestant state that espoused a certain degree of religious tolerance by the 18th century. So those, you know, it, in a sense, Freemasonry, with the electrifying force of secrecy, embodied a whole set of no-nos for the papacy in the 18th century and going forward.
This American President is produced by myself, Richard Lim, and Michael Neal. If you like what you've been hearing, you can help us by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to our show. I'm Richard Lim. We're back next time with more This American President.
Text the word PRESIDENT to 30605, and I'll send you a link to a wonderful product that can help you finally succeed in shedding that extra weight. Lily in Tennessee lost 42 pounds with Calitren. Jeff in Indiana lost 55 pounds. Beth said her joint aches have eased up considerably, and she is sleeping so much better. Text the word PRESIDENT to 30605 right now to see this week's special offer on Calitren. Calitren contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calitren promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calitren has an amazing 86% success rate with their 90-day supply. And this week, take advantage of my special offer. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free plus free shipping. Ordering is so easy. Just text the word PRESIDENT to 30605, and I'll send you a link to the special offer.
After Teddy Roosevelt's failed third-party presidential run, he thought that he would reassemble the Rough Riders for a final charge against the Germans in World War I by launching a cavalry attack against 50-caliber machine guns. Here's an interview with Bill Hazelgrove to look at this incredible story.
Teddy Roosevelt was one of these people who seemed indestructible. And that's why I think a lot of Americans wanted him to go, because in a way, he was their Superman.
To listen to this full interview, check out the History Unplugged podcast on the podcast player of your choice.